the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello again. Welcome along to the FWA podcast from William Hill. My name is Lee Phelps and delighted to say that football correspondent with the Daily Mirror, John Cross, is our guest this week. Hey, John, you all right?
Yeah, very good, Lee. How are you? Good?
Yeah, you're fresh from Jose Mourinho's Pearls of Wisdom, are you?
Yes, he's always interesting, always good in entertaining the special ones. So, he's good words actually ahead of their game with Leicester this weekend. So it's always entertaining to come and see him.
Yeah, I can imagine if you get that call, you go into the Chelsea press conference, you kind of think, yeah, nice one, that's probably one of the better ones to do. He, of course, did the ice bucket challenge, as most people are doing at the minute, aren't they, yesterday, and his reaction was to that was superb as well. I thought he'd just sit there, John, and just, like, take it, you know, not even flinch, you know, in true Jose style, but he found it a little bit uncomfortable, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got a few things to talk about. Should we start with Cardiff and Crystal Palace? I suppose it's more Crystal Palace than Cardiff, really. But back in February, I remember listening to an interview that David Ornstein did for the BBC, and because it was interesting at the time, Vincent Tam was, you know, the bad guy, and he said about three times in the interview, the truth will out, and then you'll see that I am not the bad guy in this. Turns out he wasn't far off the mark, was he?
No, that's right. I do think the wind has changed, really, hasn't it? It's taken a while. I must say, at first, thinking of it when I was writing it, really, on Wednesday, revenge is a dish served cold, and it did look like that. But actually, when you look at it and the detail of the text sent between Ian Moody and Malky Mackay. Obviously, there's allegations about sort of transfers as well. Suddenly, I think it's kind of swung back in Vincent Tan's favour, really, and people are now much more sympathetic with the Cardiff owner than they are with Malky Mackay, which has been completely the other way up until now. I just think in black and white, as papers have published the text this week, it just looks horrendous. Yeah. And then, you know, on top of that, then we've had the LMA statement defending it as banter. And it looks horrendous. It's a bad reflection on football and what is acceptable, what is deemed acceptable. Thankfully, the LMA have rowed back in a bit. But really, this week and these last few days has been sort of a bit of an ugly stain on football and what we think is acceptable in football as a whole, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be fair, John, I think anyone who's involved in football or who has dealings with football clubs or football personnel knows that it's not the most PC of worlds, is it? Let's be fair about it. It's not like everyone's walking around behind the scenes and being ultra PC. The kind of idea of the idea that the dressing room, it can be a fierce place at times, can't it? From a manager to players, from player to player, from, you know, all around, youth players get it in the neck a lot. It's part of the game, isn't it? There's a line, though, to be drawn between the things that you say in the workplace and the things that are allowed to be public. Richard Scudamore, of course, found this as well, didn't he, himself? They have to be careful that these are people who are in the public eye. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, millions of people all over the world who say things they shouldn't do in private to their friends. But these guys are role models at the end of the day, aren't they? And the people who are in the public eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. It's funny, really, yesterday I sort of rang a few sort of kind of people within the game at a couple of clubs just to sort of say, you know, I don't know, have a chat and just see how things are going. And a couple of them did sort of hold up, well, it's dressing room banter. It's nothing too much wrong with that. You know, this goes on in our sort of club and dressing room all of the time, as if that's okay, that it goes on all the time, so that's acceptable. I don't think it is. Look, I think some of it is, I can see that basically some of it is going to be sort of, they sent an awful lot of texts, and I'm sure a lot of them were probably childish texts, a bit immature, having a giggle and a laugh. But when you're talking about racist texts and racism within the game, you're crossing a very, very serious line. Definitely. Let alone anything else about homophobic abuse or anything like that. I mean, it just crosses a line that is completely unacceptable when you're talking about racism. Yeah. And I do think that it is this kind of underbelly which is seen acceptable as banter between players. And look, I don't think you can say that in normal society, and people don't accept that in normal society. People obviously do it, but you wouldn't do it against people that you kind of didn't know and I don't think it's acceptable. As a sort of friendly banter is ridiculously wrong, and I'm pleased to say that it's almost been exposed, because people seem to be getting away with it and people seem to be deeming it as okay when it's clearly not. And I just think that it's come about in the most strange of fashion. I do think it's something that Vincent Tan has obviously I think probably used to his advantage in a way, in that basically I think it's clearly stopped Malky Mackay working again and getting that Crystal Palace job. But I think he did, obviously, by all accounts, ask Malky Mackay and Ian Moody to self-report themselves to the FA, which they decided not to do. And rather than see them sort of work again, he's decided, I think, obviously, to put forward details now to the FA. I think the FA are looking at it. I think it's going to take months. I think there's an awful lot of information to sift through. Obviously, there's two sides to every story, and Malky Mackay and Moody, I'm sure, will find and try and fight and clear their names and reputations. But I do think the sooner the better, really, that football learns its lesson and football understands that really it has to wise up and sort of fall into the rest of the society, particularly when it comes to racism and such forth.
Well, definitely, because, you know, the fans have been kind of made out to be the bad ones in all this for a long time, and you know, and I think a lot of clubs have really tightened up their act and have improved the behaviour of fans on the terraces, and lo and behold, it seems to be worse now behind the scenes. But the Crystal Palace job is out there still, isn't it? Tim Sherwood's withdrawn his name from the running. Malky Mackay obviously was about to be named the boss and then not. Neil Lennon is now the 7-4 favourite. Tony Pulis, remarkably, is back in the betting here at 4-1 second favourite, a shorter price than the current caretaker boss Keith Millen at 5-1. He's preparing to, you know, to take them into a Premier League action this weekend against West Ham. Steve Clark's 5-1 as well. Dermot Drummy is 6-1. Martin Yol 10-1. 14-1 for Phil Brown. Then you get up to 20-1 and bigger. But there are some decent names in there. You know, Chris Hughton's 20-1. David Moyes is 20-1. Still quite a few good candidates out there. Have you heard anything about where this is now with this week's occurrences? They probably just want to get it over and done with, Palace, don't they?
Well, absolutely. The other interesting one, of course, this week that was thrown up was Glenn Hoddle, who I think had a chat about it and then decided not to pursue it.
Yeah, 25-1 he is at the moment.
Well, I think he'll stay put, and I think he'll be ultimately, I think he'll be the next QPR boss when Harry Redknapp eventually goes. I just feel that of all those names that you throw forward, look, I think Keith Miller will probably get it now for a few games. Mm-hmm. That would be my reading of it. Maybe it's an opportunity for him. Of all those names that you've put forward, the standout candidate for me, and I just don't understand why the Premier League or English football seems to be so reluctant, is Neil Lennon. I think Neil Lennon have done a wonderful job at Celtic. It's the Champions League later rounds. Yes, it's a very difficult league to gauge, because I think the domestic league, how do you compare when there's so few competition, really, so little teams to compete against. But I think he did a wonderful job, and I think it's incredible, I think, when you look at some of the other names and candidates there. I think Neil Lennon is a standout one for me. I'm amazed that an English club hasn't given him a chance. He's quit Celtic before he's got something else to try and come to English football. For me, that's a perfect fit. I think there's a few interesting ones, isn't there, that I think Millen will indeed now be given a little bit of time. I think it's not long to go until the end of the window. I think that's quite important for Steve Parish to sort of try and put forward some names and some money for new signings. I think that if Millen does well enough, then he might get a chance. If not, then I think perhaps that they should look to someone like Neil Lennon. Beyond that, Dermot Drummy is quite interesting. Mm. Done a really good job as a youth coach at Chelsea. It's just, I guess, whether they gauge that he's got enough experience for the Premier League, which is quite interesting to see. But it's funny, really, that Tim Sherwood has backed away from it. I don't think beggars can be choosers. I was surprised by that one.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. We'll wait and see. The Palace chairman did, of course, say he'll be looking for someone with experience. So there's a few names to conjure with there. We're into the second week of the Premier League this weekend, of course. The first week threw up some interesting results and performances as well. Of course, Manchester United carrying on where they left off last year, really, even under the new boss, losing at home to Swansea, and yet another run. Swansea's long run of not beating Man United ends. The other top clubs in Liverpool and Manchester City and Tottenham, they kind of had to do it the hard way, I guess. Man City didn't break too much of a sweat, but you know, they're under the cosh by Newcastle for a while. Liverpool withstood quite a lot of pressure from Southampton. Arsenal, of course, left it late for Palace. Chelsea are purring already. What did we learn from the first week of the Premier League, John?
I think the status quo of the top of the table is fascinating. I just think it was remarkable, wasn't it, really, to see sort of Chelsea right up there, Man City, Liverpool and Arsenal, just perfect, really. Good weekends. I mean, look, I think that really Chelsea were outstanding at Burnley, absolutely outstanding. I thought their all-round performance was great. They bought ready-made players. I think it's really interesting that the sort of kind of Courtois comes in as well as number one, obviously. I was surprised at that. I think Petacek has done really, really well, to be honest. I think he's done extremely well over the last 10 years or so to become a Chelsea legend. I'm not sure he quite deserved that. But I think Costa was a fantastic signing for them. He'll score lots of goals. I think Fabregas is ready-made for the Premier League. For me, Chelsea just showed why I think they're a lot of people's favourites to win the title. I think City showed that perhaps they're determined to be a bit more strong defensively. And I think it was a really good, resolute victory at Newcastle. So that was impressive. I think Liverpool, perhaps they illustrated that it's going to be very difficult to fill the void left by Luis Suarez. I think that they sort of laboured in that game against Southampton. But I think at the same time, they dug out that victory. They're determined to strengthen their striking options. And I think that they've done that. And I think with Arsenal, it was a difficult start for them. Crystal Palace in the mire, really, but they still ground out a very determined performance, unlucky to lose. So I do think that, really, I think you're going to see the same clubs going for it, the same clubs towards the top, with kind of the exceptions to all the outside of the top four, probably to be Tottenham, who have already shown that they're sort of determined to push on with Pochettino. Everton, you know, spent big this summer on his almost existing players that they had last year. So I don't think actually the push will be any easier for clubs to break into the top four. And indeed, Manchester United, I'm sure they'll come back after a difficult start and really come back again for it. I mean, at the moment, I just don't feel that United have the quality, to be honest, to really get back into that title race. But I wouldn't rule them out of the chase for the top four.
I understand completely. You can bet on the who will be the champions, the top four, relegation, to finish bottom of the pile, top goal scorer, the winner of the title, and the top goal scorer doubles as well. And a big move in the PFA Player of the Year betting, 20-1, Cesc Fabregas was before the start of the season, is into 8-1 favourite to scoop that accolade this year after his great performance in that opener. As for this weekend, John, there's again, we're straight back into it, some decent matches. Aston Villa versus Newcastle starts it all off with a TV game at 12:45. We've got the likes of Chelsea, Leicester, Palace, West Ham, Southampton, West Brom, Swansea, Burnley at 3 o'clock on Saturday. The evening game is Everton, Arsenal. Everton winning that one 3-0 last year, remember, at Goodison. Then on Sunday, Hull versus Stoke, Tottenham versus QPR, and Sunderland versus Manchester United on the TV. But the big one, and it's a little bit of a shame that it's so early in the season, in a sense, it's first versus second from last time round. Manchester City versus Liverpool. Manchester City kind of, as I've already mentioned, kind of eased their way through that first game, in a sense. The big news, of course, is that Balotelli's signed for Liverpool, but he won't be able to play in this match. What do you make of that signing? It's some people are kind of thinking, yeah, great signing. Others are thinking it can only be trouble.
I think it can only be trouble, to be honest.
And Colm Inch's film.
Absolutely, we're pleased to see
the Liverpool Echo will be like rubbing their hands together, won't they?
Absolutely, absolutely, as we will be. Yeah. I mean, fantastic, you know, he's the centre of attention. Why always me, you know, T-shirts come out? Well, it's simply because, you know, you always demand to be the centre of attention. Letting off fireworks in your bathroom isn't always the ideal way to avoid headlines. But it's just, I think he's a wonderful player. He's a prolific goal scorer, lethal finisher, wonderful striker, fantastic ratio of goals to games. But it's just what comes with him. I mean, they're signing a player for £16 million, which I think is great value, by the way, really good price. But by the same token, they're also signing a player who's as notorious off the pitch as he is on it. Mm. I mean, it's just remarkable. Brendan Rodgers has built up a very, very good dressing room, got together a good tight unit and spirit. And I just don't understand why he's quite taking a gamble on Balotelli, who's got the potential to upset that dressing room. He's going to have to manage him well. He did do that, in fairness to him, Brendan Rodgers with Luis Suarez last season. But I do think it's a bit of a gamble, really. Mm, I think it is that gamble. And the very fact that they're immediately talking before signing him about a sort of good behaviour clause in his contract tells you all you need to know. They're not convinced that he can behave well, so they're having to put a clause in. Well, if you're not convinced about his behaviour, don't sign him. It's a really strange, you know, approach for my money, and I'm a bit surprised by it, really, to be honest with you. I mean, he even showed at the World Cup that, that frankly, he started really well against England and obviously scored and played well, and then faded away and was a troublesome character in the camp.
Yeah.
And that tells you all you need to know. Yeah. So it is a gamble, massive gamble.
Yeah, some specials on the William Hill website about how many games he'll start in the Premier League for Liverpool and how many goals he'll get. You can back 24 or fewer starts at 7-4, 29 or more starts at 13-8, and 25 to 28 starts at 13-8 as well. You can check back on the... I think he's never played, you know, a full season in the Premier League. Is I think 17 one season, 23 appearances the season after, and he may be kept for the Champions League with the European experience that he's got from Brendan Rodgers. So maybe it might be worth looking at 24 or fewer at 7-4 there. The same with the goals. You can back 16 or more, 12-15 or 11 and fewer goals. And the price is 11-8, 13-8, 2-1. It is going to be fascinating as we go through the season. What about a bet of the week, John? We ask all the writers from the FWA to come up with a favourite bet for the weekend's football. Is there anything that really grabs your attention this weekend?
I tell you what, how about, I just thought that basically the one that really sort of grabbed me is a bit of a potential upset at QPR at Tottenham.
Right, okay.
I just think that's got potential. I think that Harry Redknapp going back to White Hart Lane for the first time, get a great reception. But the key to this one, more than anything else, is how will the effect, if you like, of playing in Europe in midweek really hit Tottenham. We're going back from the Thursday to the Sunday again, of course.
Yeah.
And I think that had sort of kind of potential. You think that's an absolute home banker. While QPR might be hard-pressed to go and win there, I think even a draw might be a bit of an upset, you know. And I just think that those games have got potential to upset the likes of the Europa League contenders all season, and until kind of almost the Premier League clubs can nail that down and sort of kind of the balance between the two, then you'll continually, I think, see upsets right throughout the campaign, really. But I do think this weekend is again absolutely fantastic games, really, really great to see. I think the sort of the Everton Arsenal might be the standout game on Saturday, but I think Monday night is just going to be a fantastic game again, isn't it? And that'll tell us a lot about the sort of the whereabouts of the two title contenders for my money. I think Man City and Liverpool, I think absolutely fantastic potential between those two.
The price is QPR, a really big price, actually 6-1. The draw is 3-1. There are a couple of other ways of playing that. If you can take QPR and the draw, so you get the two of the three results in your favour, and that's 8-5. Or you can do, if you're not used to betting, there's something called a draw no bet, which is if it ends up in a draw, you get your money back, and if QPR happen to win, you get paid out at 4-1. So a bit shorter than the actual win price, but you're kind of getting, you're insuring it, I guess, is the best way of describing it. Looks a teasing one. That one, I think I agree with you. I think the other one in that same argument is Stoke to win at Hull, with Hull coming back from Belgium on Thursday night as well. A little bit later than Tottenham, even so. Yeah, the Europa League teams to stumble a little this weekend. Looks like it might be a nice little double. John, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much.
Cheers. That's John Cross from the Daily Mirror and the FWA, of course. If you want to download this podcast, it's at the footballwriters.co.uk. That's the FWA website. It's on williamhill.com/podcasts, and it's also on audioboo.fm. You can subscribe via iTunes, and then you get all of our football podcasts. If you're having a bet on anything we've discussed this weekend, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.